Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at KSFR.org, podcasting at SantaFeRadioCafe.org, thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services, and we're at Facebook.com/RadioCafe. Later in the program, Bill Hutchison and Ben Swan will be here talking about cats and dogs and spaying and neutering. I'm delighted now to welcome to the program Yael Falikoff. She is Executive Director of the organization Eco Viva. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having me on, Mary Charlotte.
So this is a nonprofit organization whose work centers in El Salvador, and we want to hear about the work that you do. You link democracy, peace, social justice, and environmental sustainability. You think of these things all together. What does the organization do, and how does it work?
Sure. We have been working directly with local communities in El Salvador for 15 years now. It's our 15th year this year. And what we do is provide direct support in terms of funding and also technical assistance to a group of about 100 communities living in and near the Bay of Jiquilisco Biosphere Reserve, which is the largest protected area in El Salvador. These communities are mostly resettled refugees who have been organizing for greater democracy and greater prosperity for themselves and their communities, as well as to protect their environment for as long as we've been around. We've been working together with them since the beginning, and we've also used our experience there to begin support other communities in Honduras and Panama as well. But our main focus has been in El Salvador, really supporting local social movements that combine all the different factors you mentioned.
Now, in a 10-year period, mostly the 1980s, the United States spent $7 billion in El Salvador to support a military government that was using death squads and massacres and opposing, really, the types of local, democratic, sustainable leadership and organization that you guys are doing. What happened as a result of that? What are some of the, let's say, structural and emotional results of that war in terms of what's happening in the areas that you're working?
Well, it's a great question. You know, the U.S. involvement there is a really big stain on our history, as there are so many similar cases in the world. And the results of that are, you know, really widespread trauma nationwide, because over 300,000 people were killed in the civil war that essentially was a military repression of democratic social movements. And the result of that is a country in which, you know, a whole generation of people were exiled during the war. Almost everyone lost family members. People were internally displaced so that, you know, they had to resettle in completely different areas of the country and basically rebuild the country from scratch. And the result of that is, you know, a whole generation of people who missed schooling completely, and many of their children who have ended up joining gangs, which are an import actually from the United States. Los Angeles, particularly, where Salvadoran refugees and their children ended up and then ended up joining gangs and then ended up deported back to El Salvador. So there's been this very negative influence of the United States in various ways. And our organization and the number of other organizations of U.S. citizens supporting social movements in El Salvador have been there sort of to counteract some of those negative influences and act as a solidarity bridge. You know, what's interesting is we've been supporting conflict resolution, conflict transformation in the area we've been working in for 15 years, and part of the result of that has been not only a gang truce that's now been in place for 10 years as of this year, but really no gang violence and very little gang presence in this one area of the country that we've been in. So we're really happy that, you know, in that sense, we've been able to counteract what's probably the biggest problem El Salvador faces, which is violence related to gangs.
How did you actually deal with that? That's one of the toughest problems in any city in the United States.
Well, interestingly, we were able to support a local model of conflict resolution. And what we discovered and now is being really discussed at a nationwide level is that a lot of the violence that happens in El Salvador is due to conflicts between families and between neighbors that then gets exploited by gangs, so that young people get involved in beefs, sort of similar as they do here in the States, where, you know, rivalries that end up having more to do with local problems than they have to do really even with drug smuggling or some of the bigger issues. And so by resolving some of those local conflicts, you really can dramatically reduce violence. In addition, once the gang truce was reached in 2001 in this local area, which is the lower Lempun Bay of Iquilisco area, the local communities developed their own community patrols to keep out negative influences and gang members that would come in from the city to try to recruit. This is a very rural area, and so the villages now, you know, they have their own community patrols that sort of protect the area, and they keep their kids out of gangs. And part of how they do that is we support a really effective youth empowerment program that in which young people go through this wonderful training in popular education and arts, believe it or not, in which they have their own community radio station. They're doing theater. They're doing murals. Really supporting kind of a local culture of positive youth development in addition to scholarships and education that's focused on keeping young people from having to migrate to find work. And we're beginning to have some success with that as well.
To what extent are those cultural and arts programs based in local Salvadoran culture, and to what extent are they also kind of imports from the U.S. or whatever?
It's really local. The program is all run by Salvadorans, and, you know, sure, there's influence from outside, but the interestingly, we, you know, part of it is we supported resident artists to be there for 5 years through a program called Art Corps, and they brought other influences, but I'd say they're mostly influences in Latin American muraling and popular theater, which comes from Augusto Boal from Brazil. And so I'd say the cultural influences are more sort of pan-Latin American and less about sort of U.S. pop culture. So it's been really, really successful and fun, too.
Yeah. We're talking to Yael Falikov of Eco Viva. So El Salvador has a history of environmental destruction of its forests and of its farmlands, and there you are working with people to do organic farming and mangrove forest protection, which I want to talk about, and climate change prevention. Give us a picture of the ecosystems in these places, what the problems are, and how you're dealing with them.
Sure. Well, as you know, it sounds like you're familiar with, El Salvador has the second highest level of environmental degradation in Latin America, Haiti being first. So it's only 2% of the original forest cover is left in El Salvador due to war and poverty and, you know, military clear-cutting of many, many areas. Of the few forests that are left in El Salvador, the largest wetlands forest is the Bay of Iquilisco, where our work is focused. And this is a mangrove forest ecosystem, which mangrove forests, for those who are unfamiliar, are coastal wetland forests. And these ecosystems are critical environmentally to our planet. They can sequester up to 4 times as much carbon as rainforests. So really, they are a critical part of the lungs of the planet, and only 50% or less of the mangroves that originally existed in the world are left standing today, with the Bay of Iquilisco mangrove forest being the largest left in Central America. So even though El Salvador as a whole has a high level of environmental degradation, this area has survived, and it faces numerous problems. One is because of massive plantations that were in this area. That's how a lot of the clear cutting originally happened of some of those mangrove forests. But because of those plantations, there's a high level of pollutants in the water. This region has some of the highest levels of chronic kidney disease, perhaps in the world, but certainly in the region. One of the communities that we work in, one in three people suffers from chronic kidney disease, one in three adults, I should say. And even it's striking teenagers as well. And that has to do with deeply persistent pesticides from cotton plantations, as well as pesticides that are currently being applied to sugarcane plantations. The sugarcane plantations also pose a threat because they're ever expanding and trying to cut into the mangrove forests. So we're currently engaged in a campaign where the local communities that we work with have been organizing local municipalities to protect, to pass ordinances that will ban the most egregious environmentally destructive practices from sugarcane plantations, including the use of the most toxic pesticides, which many of which are banned in the United States already, but are not in El Salvador, and the burning of the fields, which causes all kinds of air quality problems and serious respiratory problems in the local population, as well as obviously preventing the plantations from expanding into the mangrove forests. So we're working to support the passing of these ordinances in eight municipalities right now, which would be unprecedented for El Salvador. And we also are working to try to get some national policy in place, although it's very difficult because the sugarcane plantation owners are very powerful. So that's one major issue. And, you know, the organic farming that we support is another really big piece of that, because all the communities we work with, farming is a major source of income and sustenance. These are mostly subsistence farmers. And thanks to programs pushed by the World Bank all over the world, really, but, you know, in El Salvador as well, most subsistence farmers farm with highly toxic chemicals, and use sort of these packets of hybrid seeds that come with all sorts of chemical fertilizers, that where the productivity goes down every year. And they traditionally plant only corn, and so they're really vulnerable in terms of climate change to losing their crops and being hungry, which happens really with quite a high level of frequency. There's a lot of malnutrition. And so these environmental issues aren't just about protecting the environment, but really about basic survival for these families. And so we've been supporting for about 12 years now a diversified organic farming program that trains local farmers to plant a diversity of crops so they don't just depend on one crop. And they these are climate-adapted crops, a lot of native crops that are being recovered for their nutritional value and for the adaptability to the climate. And they're being planted in such a way that they complement each other and protect each other from pests. The farmers are trained to produce their own organic fertilizers and pesticides, and this is all for their local consumption. The farmers participating in the program have increased their production so much now that they are actually having their own mostly organic farmers markets for the very first time. This is in an area which, you know, was just resettled now about 17 years ago. There was actually no one there 17 years ago, and there's been no markets. Everyone has to travel to the closest city to get their produce. So this is a major change to the economy as well, for local people to be able to provide themselves with a wide variety of nutritious food.
It's interesting to be working in a place that is not populated by people who've been there for generations. So in a way, there's, on the one hand, a kind of lack of roots. On the other hand, the possibility of establishing really new and effective ways of doing things without having to go counter to what was there before, since there was nothing there before.
Yes, it is. It's been a really interesting opportunity, and the history of these communities is just amazing. I don't think any of this could be possible without their level of organization, which was acquired through having survived years of exile. These are mainly people who were, you know, living in dire poverty in the mountains, you know, before the war, who were organizing for greater democracy and for that were persecuted by the army, fled into exile sort of in their same village groups, and remained in some cases in the jungles of Panama, in other cases in refugee camps in Nicaragua and Honduras for 10, 11 years before they came back, often on foot, as a group, each village, and resettled in this area. And
very
the level of organizing that it took to keep them together through all the intense trauma that they went through has really led to some incredible creativity and ability to address their own problems. And really all of the initiatives I've spoken about have been local initiatives that we've supported by, you know, providing, as I've mentioned, some funding, often some outside technical assistance, but really they've identified what their needs are. And it's been this very creative process of coming up with solutions that, as you said, sort of they're able to implement and try new things in a way that maybe people who were rooted for centuries in one place couldn't. Just to give you another example, they've had this pilot program now for the last few years to protect a part of the mangrove forest through something that they're calling the Local Sustainable Use Plan, where 8 communities develop their own regulations, which until now have not been recognized by the government, until actually just last month, when the Ministry of the Environment recognized this as a unique and effective model for protecting the local ecosystem. So these are fisher people and farmers and people who collect crabs and shellfish and sort of other people who live off the local environment who themselves have developed regulations in conjunction with scientists from the University of El Salvador who help local people conduct their own studies to see which species were in danger of being overexploited and how could they continue to fish for those different species without overexploiting them. And so they've been able to protect the forest and the species that live in the forest and also improve their own livelihoods. So you know, usually, often it's local people who are sort of blamed for destroying an ecosystem as, oh, the fisher people are overfishing. And in this case, it's those people themselves who are recognizing that it's in their economic interests and the interests of sort of their own families and their own survival to protect that ecosystem and coming up with really creative ways to do it. So that's been a really exciting process. We were just in a meeting with the Ministry of the Environment last week where they recognized that this is a unique model that they would like to replicate in other areas of El Salvador and expand for the entire Bay of Jiquilisco. So we're really excited about that because it really is about sort of local participation in the economy, in the democracy, and in the environment. They're all interconnected.
We're talking to Yael Falikoff of EcoViva. Now, the chairman of your board of directors is Jeff Haas, who lives here in Santa Fe, and you're planning a trip to El Salvador coming up, I think, fairly soon for Santa Feans or New Mexicans who want to see all of this, what we've been talking about, for themselves. Tell us about that. How does that work?
Yes. So, as you mentioned, Jeff Haas is chair of our board, and his wife, Marielle Nanasi, who is the executive director of New Energy Economy there in Santa Fe, is planning a trip for Santa Feans and others who want to come and witness for themselves some of the wonderful work I've been talking about. As I mentioned, the Bay of Jiquilisco is a beautiful mangrove forest and a very special ecosystem, and the local people are doing just wonderful, inspiring things. And so we've organized these community empowerment tours. The reason we call it a community empowerment tour is because you can come and witness the empowerment of the communities themselves, but also the tours themselves are run by the local communities and benefit the local communities. So the tours themselves are also empowering and also contribute to the local economy. So we have a tour coming up from April 8th to the 14th of this year. So it's a week-long tour to come and take a boat ride through the mangroves, meet some of the mangrove guardians, who are the local community patrols who protect the forest, to meet with the Youth Empowerment Program and to participate in some of their theater and radio activities. You can come and release sea turtles on the beach. We have a wonderful sea turtle hatchery program protecting the most endangered sea turtle species in the world, the Eastern Pacific Hawksbill, as well as three other threatened species. We've released over 1 million sea turtles to date.
Do you get to go swimming with them?
These are baby sea turtles, so they swim off on their own. They're tiny.
Right.
But you come and see them when they've just hatched and release them right into the ocean, which is a beautiful experience. The mother sea turtles will have already laid the eggs a couple of months before you get there. So we're hoping to develop some tours where you can go out at night and see the mama turtles lay their eggs. That's a sort of a next step for
right.
our program. So this one will involve going and releasing the babies. As just one of the many activities, and then visiting also the organic farms and organic cashew roasting cooperative. So it's just getting to see some of the really wonderful local initiatives that have transformed this part of the country. Our hope is that, people go and have an inspiring experience, a beautiful experience, and also bring some of that inspiration home because, we also need to transform our society, in terms of our role in climate change and learning to live in new ways that really build us up, local economies and protect our own democracy. So we feel that we can learn a lot from what's happening in El Salvador and take that inspiration with us and sort of apply some of that creativity here at home. So we really invite folks from Santa Fe to come. It's a small group of six people who've signed up. So it's, what's nice about it is they're very personalized tours. You don't need to speak any Spanish. We provide a very capable local interpreter who's a local young man who from one of the local communities who studied natural resource management in the United States and then came home to work in his community. So it's really a great experience of having an authentic experience of seeing and being part of local community empowerment in a way that's really hard to, some experience you usually are able to have when you visit a country.
Yael Falikov is executive director of the organization Eco Viva. They can be found on the net at eco-viva.org. And the phone number out there is area code 510-835-1334. And I'll link all of that on my website, santafe.radiocafe.org. Yael, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much, and I encourage everyone, if you're interested in the tour, to go to our website and click on Upcoming Tours, and you can click right there on the itinerary for more information. Thanks
Excellent.
So much, Mary Charlotte.
Thanks to you. We're going to take a little break right now. Please stay tuned to KSFR. I'm very happy now to welcome Bill Hutchison and Ben Swan from the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society, and we're here to talk about a great event that's happening the day after tomorrow, Thursday the 17th, of February. Gentlemen, welcome.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte. Thank you for having us.
We had you on
last week talking about cats versus dogs, which is better.
We've made up since then.
It turns out cats are better.
We've come to accord.
Yeah, we're going to try again next year, the dog people. But anyway, both cats and dogs can reproduce in numbers that are so staggering.
Astronomical,
and in order to prevent unwanted dogs from populating the state of New Mexico, overpopulating the state of New Mexico, you have an event called Spay Day.
It's very exciting. It's actually a national event that we take part in every year. This year we'll be doing it on Thursday.
At our
spay neuter and wellness clinic, and it's very exciting, and it's going to be fun. I think it's going
to
be
it's
a mob scene.
It's exciting to take the gonads.
No. Everything around it is a lot of fun, and the actual surgery is fine. but it's just one aspect of it.
Okay.
It's very professional.
Yes.
We'll be offering free spay and neuter to the first 100 clients that show up, and we expect people to start lining up probably around 6:30.
Yes.
We'll do check-in from 7 to 10 on Thursday.
And that's at our wellness clinic at 2570 Camino Entrada between Outback Steakhouse and Kohl's. It's also right next door to the resale store, and I'll be entertaining people with coffee and pastries, thanks courtesy of Tribes.
Nice.
Yeah, I'll be getting up really early. And
at the thrift store there.
Yes, but I'll have a little cart, and so if they're in line, I'll come get them and bring them coffee, or they can come inside and warm up.
Now, what's happening? Is it actually free?
Yes, totally free.
It's actually free. Not even like free asterisk small print.
No.
It's just plain free.
Free for you.
Yeah, we have a great anonymous donor who is underwriting this event and also sponsoring some surgeries up in Española and four of our veterinary partners that we'll talk about in a minute. But this is absolutely free to the first 100 people that show up. And there's lots of bennies. Not only do you get the free surgery, you get to visit with Ben at Look What the Cat Dragged In. And
that's one of the bennies.
A benny. You get the special discount if you are one of the 100. That is only for those 100 surgeries. You'll get the special discount that day at Look What the Cat Dragged In.
Look right. What the Cat Dragged In is the thrift shop.
Exactly. It is. Yes.
It's the resale store.
And lots of yummies thanks to Tribes.
Okay, now, 100 cats or dogs are going to get spayed or neutered. And actually, you should have a contest and see whether there's more cat people or dog people who bring their animals in.
I suspect more cats.
I don't know. I was actually going to say more dogs. Not even in keeping with
I imagine more dogs, too, but I'm trying to encourage people to be
I see the undertone. Okay, let me back that up. Yes, Ben, I agree.
I think
we'll have more cats than dogs. We'll just have to see.
Or we might have more dogs than cats, too. That could also be a possibility. But there are a lot of reasons, besides just not getting around to it, why people don't spay and neuter their animals. What are some of those reasons?
Well, first off, I think it's just incredible that people don't just automatically have their animals spayed and neutered when they get a new pet. It's just, like, unusual that people wouldn't do that. It should be like, oh, we got to get vaccinations, got to have them spayed and neutered. But we do have some really interesting myths and reasons, the top worst reasons why people don't want to have their animals spayed or neutered. And one of them is just one litter and we'll have Fluffy spayed. Essentially, it's really good for them to experience the birth. But studies show that nearly the entire pet overpopulation stems from just one litter mentality.
Oh, really?
And there's like zero medical evidence that they should have a litter. This is an old wives' tale.
Very interesting.
One of the things that we hear a lot from people is that, I've got a purebred dog. I'm not going to get my purebred dog spayed and neutered. Well, guess what? One out of every four animals that ends up in shelters across the country are purebred. So to imagine that whether it's a mixed breed or a purebred, that you shouldn't get it altered, there's already too many dogs in this community. Our shelter is full of just about any breed that you can imagine wanting to adopt, we get in at the shelter.
And pure dachshunds, pure Jack Russell Terriers,
absolutely.
Pure German Shepherds.
Pugs, chihuahuas,
beautiful cats.
Golden retrievers, labs, absolutely.
And they're unwanted animals, even though they're purebred.
Unwanted
homeless animals. Yeah.
Are purebreds easier
Scotties,
to adopt
Westies.
Out?
It really depends. A lot of it depends on the personality of the animal. Some of the small purebred breeds are very desirable to people. So if you're one of the folks who has a tremendous attachment to pugs, for example, which is a breed that I'm always very fond of, or you really like Jack Russells, I'll guarantee you that in an area shelter there is or will shortly be one there for you.
Yeah.
And to imagine that this sort of pure blood status of your dog would exempt them from the overpopulation problem, it is precisely that kind of thinking that has put this community into. It's part of the thinking that's put it into the overpopulation problem.
One of the things I do secretly late at night is I go to the Dachshund Rescue site and look at who's available, and there's a lot of purebred dachshunds available who don't have homes.
That's like sneaking through online personals when you already have a partner.
Right.
You're cheating on your existing dog.
I hope you curb that habit.
No, it's true, but you do what you do. But okay, so what are some of the other myths that people think about when they think, the reasons they think they shouldn't spay or neuter their animals?
A lot of people say we always find a home for the kittens or puppies or it's something like that. And the truth is that there are just an equal number of kittens and puppies at the shelter, as Bill was saying, that fall in that category. Oh, I'll find somebody for them. It's really a burden. to have a litter and then expect your friends to pick up a cat or a dog. It's just not fair.
So people say, oh, I'll find a home for that. And maybe they do, maybe they don't. And some of the times they think they'll find a home for it and it ends up in the shelter.
Right, exactly.
And some of the time they do find a home for it, but that person could have gone to the shelter and adopted a dog that still is homeless.
And moreover, you don't always know what's going to happen with that one. Are they going to get that? Are you going to pay for that whole litter to get spayed and neutered? You know, sure, somebody's going to say, oh, absolutely, I promise I'll get them spayed and neutered. But we've seen time and again that those puppies and kittens that you found homes for end up having more puppies and kittens that our staff has to find homes for. And it puts a tremendous burden on animal welfare organizations throughout this community.
We're talking about Spay Day, which is happening on Thursday the 17th. That's the day after tomorrow. Now, is it one per customer? If you come in with two fertile dogs and you're first in line, can you get them both done?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Without a doubt. Yeah, we're gonna take spots until the spots are filled. Spots, as it were.
I had a dog named Spot.
Yeah, my dog Spot. One of my favorite myths that I hear about, and this one I try to stifle. You know, I believe strongly in the idea that you don't know until you know. So sometimes we encounter people who, especially for those of us that have been in animal welfare, like Ben and I, for a while. You forget that not everybody, you know, is just so intimately familiar on an instinctive level with the stuff that you've become familiar with. So when I hear people say, I don't want my cat or dog to feel like less of a man and have it neutered, it's very hard for me sometimes not to laugh out loud. But let me tell
you,
yes. Your pet doesn't care. He is not worried about it. He is not caught up in gender or sexuality issues. He is not worried about going to the gym and not looking as buff as the other dogs. It is not a problem. When your pet is neutered, he's going to be healthier and not in the midst of an identity crisis.
And to state the obvious, your dog is not a man.
Absolutely.
Ooh, very good. And just to reiterate about the idea that some people think that if you neuter or spay an animal, that they become fat and lazy. And that's totally not true.
That's
in fact,
not true
too
at
much
all.
Food and not enough exercise makes your pet and yourself.
Absolutely. I remember when Ben recently did a story on Richard Patton, who's a local nutritionist, and I remember talking to him a couple of years ago, and he said that he looks at pets and people, and people who fat lazy people tend to have fat lazy pets.
Right.
He said if you are healthy, then typically your animal will be healthy. And I have certainly found that to be the case for myself, as over the years my metabolism has slowed and my gut has grown, and it definitely has a trickle down effect.
I have a dog named Honey who's 12 years old, and at a certain point in her youth she weighed 27 and a half pounds. Now, she's a Jack Russell Terrier. She should weigh 18 pounds. And now she does weigh probably 18, 19 pounds. And we called it, when she lost all that weight, we called it the Honey Domandi weight loss miracle.
Very good.
And the National Enquirer wanted to do a story on her, but she really didn't need that. But
she looks terrible with the black things on her across the eyes,
that's
too.
That's right.
Well, they wanted her to have one of those, you know, halter tops and holding out her blue jeans,
exactly.
Like right. 2 feet in front of her.
I lost 10 pounds in 2 weeks.
I lost 10 pounds and I'm a... No, but you know what it was? Diet and exercise.
Yeah, it's the same thing. For every single mammal, that's what keeps you in shape. Diet and exercise. Getting altered is not going to make your dog fat and lazy. Walking it and eating crap is going to make your dog fat and lazy.
And giving it, like, all kinds of treats all the time because they look up at you with those big eyes.
Yes, precisely.
Yes, they train us quite well. And the other idea that goes on with that if you fix it or spay your animal, that it'll change its personality, which is not true at all. The primary influence on an animal's personality is the kindness and care which it receives from
us. Or lack thereof, unfortunately.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, I have to say, my little Jack Russell, whose name is Milk, we had him neutered when he was 4 years old, four months old, which is around the time that I got him. And he is, if dogs can be masculine and feminine, which you can, there's some debate about that, but there has never been a more masculine dog than this little gonad-free terrier.
Without a doubt. I think that tends to be absolutely true. And I've seen, we see it time and time again that, a related note, we have people say, like, oh, I need my dog's a guard dog. If we spay or neuter him, if we neuter my dog or spay this dog, they're not going to protect us.
That's not true.
Dogs are hardwired. Since we as a species began, dogs have been hardwired to protect us and their homes. Their personalities are guided much more by their genetics than they are about whether they are able to make little versions of themselves.
And if only that were true, I wouldn't be having so much trouble with my little boy, Jimmy, who is just very, is neutered right away, and he's still very much a guard dog.
Yeah, they bark. I mean, a dog who's going to do that will bark at everything, gonads or no.
Yes.
Yes. My girlfriend's sister has a tiny, tiny little chihuahua called Oliver. And Oliver has been neutered since he was very, very young. And he is so territorial that, of course, in typical dog fashion, he will bark, for example, when the UPS man comes to deliver a package and then leaves. And then when you bring the package in, he will savagely and viciously attack that package for invading his territory. This dog,
and because it was brought by an invader.
That's right. This dog protects his territory and does not like stray boxes entering his home. Stranger danger, says Oliver.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, the dachshund who is my little puppy, my little dog, if somebody comes over, he'll bark at them until they scratch his head and then it's okay. But then if they go to the bathroom and come back out again, he'll bark at them all over.
Where did you come from?
Anyway, okay. So there's a myth. Spay and Neuter is what we're talking about. Spay Day is Thursday, February 17th at the Spay Neuter Clinic on Camino Entrada here in Santa Fe. So what are some of the other myths?
Well, first I wanted to say if people had any questions about Spay Day, they should call the clinic at 474-6422.
And we'll give that number again at the end of the show.
And we're really grateful to, we have four veterinary clinics in town who are helping us. We're making the appointments for them, so you don't need to give them a call. But the Animal Wellness Center, Dr. Joan Moreau's clinic, the El Dorado Animal Clinic, VCA Arrighetti, and Emergency Vet Clinic Specialty Center, all four of those clinics are donating some of their time and doctors to help us out with this event. And
nice.
We really couldn't be more grateful. It's a project not just of animal welfare agencies, but a lot of people who care about animals. And certainly our area vet clinics are an incredibly important part of that.
And they love them so much, but they don't want, everybody knows excess is not what we want. We want just the unique ones that are there.
Precisely.
Do you have some more myths, Bill? I'm sure you do.
I do. One of the things that we hear a lot is, I've got this great dog. It's just the most wonderful dog. And I just want my dog or my cat to have a litter just so I can have, because I know one day they'll die and I just want to have another one just like them. Well, friends, look at your own parents and look at yourself.
Ouch.
Ain't going to happen, you know, and that, sometimes it's a blessing and sometimes it's a curse. To imagine that our pets, like us, are going to have, certainly there are similarities. You got your mom's eyes, or every so often you hear yourself say something that would come out of your dad's mouth. But on the whole, you know that you are your own separate and completely unique individual. Our dogs and cats are no different. It isn't going to happen. Even we were talking before we went on the air, saying, well, you could have them cloned. Mm-hmm. But it's always interesting to look at some of the Chance the Bull and Dolly the Sheep, some of these animals that have been cloned, to hear the people who knew the first animal and the cloned animal to say, though they came from precisely the same DNA, their personalities were so drastically different.
Well, I know identical twins whose personalities are different.
Amen. It isn't going to happen.
And not only that, as we were saying, that the shelter is full of these unique animals, cute and unique animals, that really are in danger of losing their lives in some ways if they're not adopted or if they're running around stray or something like that. But my dog, Zach, we got from an animal shelter because he looked exactly like my dog, Beta. Beta was a Shar-Pei Dalmatian mix. This was a Shar-Pei, I know, it's incredible, Shar-Pei lab mix. And somebody had happened to notice him and says, you have to adopt this dog because he looks exactly like your own dog. Well, I'm not kind of that way. I don't really need a dog that looks exactly like a dog. But when we did meet him, he was just a wonderful dog. And
yeah,
he did look
it.
Like Beta.
If you're looking for, that I think is, that's to Ben's point, if you're looking for a particular kind of personality, you're more likely to find it by going to look at this wide palette of personalities that is in your local animal shelter than you are by adding to the overpopulation problem by tossing the dice that Honey is going to have a little Honeyette. It ain't going to happen. Honey Junior does not exist anywhere except in our minds.
Well, and if you like the qualities of breeds, and certainly breeds do have certain qualities, I love dachshunds, and I'll probably always have dachshunds from now on. You can still go adopt another dachshund.
Without
you don't have to have
I think you should marry Charlotte. Another dachshund would be great for your life.
No comment.
But I do. Wait, there's one more myth that I thought was a really good one that people, you know, they want their children to witness the miracle of birth.
Oh, that one sends me to the moon.
Yeah, and can you tell me why? But, you know, for one thing, I'd say get a video. The other one is...
The whatever benefit your kiddo gains from witnessing the miracle of birth is definitely certainly overwhelmed by the fact that there are the unhappiness that overpopulation creates.
Exactly.
So it tends to be, and you know, I'll couch this a little bit in apology, and I mean no offense to anybody who has thought this or who has done this, but. It's certainly one of the more selfish reasons. And while it may be fascinating for your kiddo to see this, I'll guarantee that what you're doing is adding to the pain and suffering to dogs and cats that are already enduring more pain and suffering because of us than any species ever ought to be asked to shoulder. So if you really want to see the miracle of life of dogs and cats, volunteer at the shelter, and as Ben says, rent a video.
Or books. There's plenty of books on this.
Yeah, there's lots of books. There are more ways to both witness the miracle of life and actually give something back to your community rather than witnessing the miracle of birth and adding greater burden and suffering to the world. And it's such a sad and hard thing to say, but with Ben and I coming from the animal welfare world and so many caring people in this community who recognize this fact, it's simply indefensible.
We're talking to Bill Hutchison and Ben Swan from the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society about Spay Day.
I like the Antiface Animal Shelter, which I think is what she almost did. That's good. And there are lots of good reasons to do it. Like, we have an awesome medical team. We have a really good, skilled, capable medical team.
Lots of great veterinarians in line to help out with this really terrific day.
Absolutely, and great volunteers. So your friends and neighbors are going to be at the clinic on Thursday helping out with recovery and making sure that this tremendously high standard of care that we pride ourselves on does not flag even for a moment that we're doing 100 plus spays and neuters on this day.
So any other myths, any other reasons that people give you? Oh, what do I know is they say, oh, it's not natural.
Yeah, whenever I hear that, I think about my pug, and I want to say, if you think it's not natural to spay and neuter, look at a pug, look at a Shar-Pei, yeah, and tell me that this is natural.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there hasn't been anything natural about dogs and cats for hundreds of years.
It's our responsibility to care for them in the best way we can. What I think is natural is wanting to reduce the amount of suffering in the world. That is, I think that's something
not only natural, but responsible. I mean,
precisely.
We're really talking about our community, animals that are unaltered. Are, you know, they run, they, you know, they get loose, they run, they attack, you know, they form, it's, well, I couldn't say they attack, but they do, you know, they get into heat. Have you ever had experienced an animal in your family that has gone into heat?
Oh my God, a cat in heat.
They yowl. Yeah, they do. It's
stressful. And also your male dogs just run all over the place.
Exactly.
It's very hard to keep
them. Jump over the fence that, you know, that just, they'll take off. And
certainly some of them will do it anyway, but they're at least if for some reason your animal pops over your fence and running around the neighborhood, if it's spayed or neutered, it's not going to be getting knocked up and it's not going to be knocking someone else up.
And it's not spraying, you know, male cats that aren't neutered, they typically spray everywhere to mark their territory. You're not going to get that as much.
Yeah. We see from time to time in the shelter folks who are breeding their pit bulls to sell the pups, etc. And it's a very, very difficult for us to think. Very, very difficult thing for us to see. Partly because one in five animals that comes into the shelter unwanted is a pit bull or pit bull mix.
Yeah.
And because there are simply so many animals in need of homes already that this breeding is not... Some folks do it as a backyard business. I genuinely believe that if individuals who were doing this understood the suffering that they were contributing to the animal world and the struggles, the true struggle that happen in the doors of animal welfare organizations, that no decent, kind person could do this. And I think it is precisely decent, kind people who are ready to do the right thing but simply don't have the funds to do it that we're really hoping will be there on Thursday morning to take advantage of this service.
And that's why it's such a wonderful event that we just have decided just to make it special.
Yeah, absolutely. A real event. One of the other myths that I think a lot of people have in mind is that it's simply too expensive to have your pet spayed or neutered. Certainly on Thursday, it's going to be absolutely free. But our spay-neuter and wellness clinic offers low prices all year round. And especially if you are struggling, if your household makes less than $40,000 a year, if you're on any kind of public assistance, then we have super duper low prices. If you have mixed brown dogs, if you have cats, etc., then there are special prices for you.
But think about the costs of not spaying or neutering your animal. It's really cost effective, because if you don't spay or neuter your animal, you think about the cost of having and caring for a litter, and also what it costs, you know, when your unneutered tom escapes and the animal control has to pick up your stray dog who's looking after that dog in heat. It's just crazy.
We'd rather you spend your money on having a really good relationship, personal relationship, with one of our local area veterinarians who are superb at what they do. You know, that is what your money should go to, not necessarily all these other extraneous and avoidable costs that Ben's talking about.
Let's look at the comparative costs of, on the one hand, spaying your animal, and on the other hand, spaying the puppies or kittens that come out.
Without a doubt.
If you want to, instead of spaying all those puppies and kittens, just adopt one animal.
Exactly.
I mean, you might as well. The comparative cost of spaying an animal versus just adopting an existing one.
Yeah.
Probably is not that different.
And certainly it really isn't. Our adoption fees range from $35 to a little bit over $100 for an adorable youngster. And you'd be hard-pressed to find spay-neuter surgeries for that price. And I think, too, about the reality that so many of our animals face is that they are competing for a finite amount of space in this community. And you've got really lovely, wonderful animals who are struggling to be seen and to be, you know, to be loved by people who will bring them into their homes. Don't make it harder for them.
And I think one point somebody made to me a long time ago is about, if you really are concerned about getting your animal spayed or neutered, you should come to the shelter and see just how many animals there struggle because somebody wasn't responsible and took the initiative.
Any day of the week, we've got between 200 and 300 animals living in the shelter being cared for by a staff who bears the burden of this. And friends, these are your friends, these are your neighbors, your cousins, your brothers, your uncles, your sisters who do this really hard work. And I think of it even in terms of our recent KSFR fund drive. It is a community issue. I think there is sometimes is this misapprehension that overpopulation is a shelter problem. It is not, indeed. It is a community problem, which means the solution also comes out of the community, and that's very, very exciting.
Gentlemen, I believe you've made your case.
Hurrah.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.
So the spay day is happening this Thursday, the 17th of February. Free spay-neuter services to the first 100 clients to arrive, and number 101 can still take advantage of the low prices at the spay-neuter clinic. Low-cost vaccinations and microchips also are available, and I have to say, since I had my three little dogs microchipped, I feel more secure because I take their collars off at night because they go jingle, jangle, jingle, and it wakes me up, and sometimes during the day, somebody will come to the door, open the front gate, a dog will run out, and you know that your dog will be found, even if it's not.
From the standpoint of the shelter, we scan every animal at least a couple of times. If your critter has a chip, it will be coming home to you.
Yeah.
On Thursday, if you want to get in on this deal, make sure that you are there early. Check-in is between 7 and 10. But I would be thinking more on the 7 end of things, less so on the 10 end of things. And we'll have your critter ready to go home between 3:30 and 5:30.
One-stop shopping.
That's right, and special deals that look what the cat dragged in, lots of refreshments.
And between 7 a.m. and 3:30, you can go shopping.
Without a doubt.
Because you're right near Kohl's.
Might as well hang out there. I'll be there.
Place.
And more, and especially at Look What the Cat Dragged In, all of Ben's
and
good stuff.
Look What the Cat Dragged In. That's a wonderful place.
If your dog or cat is 8 weeks to 5 years, you are eligible for this. Older dogs and cats, we want to see you first for just to make sure that it's going to be safe for you. But if your little one is over 8 weeks or under 5 years and weighs more than 2 pounds, get in there early on Thursday morning. If you have questions, give a call, 474-6422. That is our clinic number. And thanks again to our veterinary partners, El Dorado Animal Clinic, the Animal Wellness Center, the Emergency Vet Clinic and Specialty Center, and Arrigetti VCA.
474-6422, Bill Hutchison and Ben Swan. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe and for the service you do for the community, animal and human.
Mary Charlotte, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. And my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.